Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded, though, by people who can support us, your family, friends, and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives, or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. Previously, Philippa Scott spoke about the importance of building communities, especially for parents who may not have family and a support network where they live and work. Life is transient for many these days, and our careers can take us places we may feel isolated and alone in. That got me thinking about our sprawling cities and the disconnect, not just from one another, but from nature and ourselves. In construction, greening is almost an afterthought, something that needs to be added back to the landscape once we've levelled it to build on. Dr. Fiona Gray is an architect who believes that our view on sustainability will never be enough. Her work focuses on regenerative architecture and biophilic design. As she recently wrote, "The way we build is a reflection of a deeper problem, a mindset that sees nature as a resource to plunder rather than a living system that we are part of." Fiona, thank you for agreeing to speak with me. I feel like I understand your view on sustainability, having worked in agriculture for more than a decade. However, I know nothing of biophilic design. What is it?
Okay, that's a great place to start. And I'm really excited to talk about biophilic design because it's really my passion area of architecture. So essentially, if you break down the word biophilia, bios, it comes from the Greek words bios, meaning life, and philia, meaning love of. So the idea of biophilia is a love of life, or you might sort of consider it a love of living things, living systems. And so when you apply that principle to design, it's designing so that we can really tap into that innate sense of connection that we have with nature. And you know, because we are part of nature and we love nature. And so really it's designing in a way that enhances and supports that connection that we have with nature.
Absolutely love that. I am a huge nature freak. In fact, I wrote a whole book trying to connect children with nature called Flutter by Butterfly. Because through nature, we receive so much without having to give too much, including, you know, peace and calm. That whole thing about being out in nature and walking in nature, the benefits have been shown for heart health, mental health. So to see this coming through in pre-thought architectural design is just phenomenal. I'm wondering why you decided as an architect to specialise in regenerative architecture.
Okay, well, I absolutely agree with you. I've always been a nature freak. I love nature. And I was really frustrated working as an architect, seeing the way that we build and how much it disconnects us from nature. So if we look at the way we've evolved as humans, we spent most of our time in nature. Over thousands of years, that's how we've evolved. And it's really only been in a very short period of time that we've moved to being an indoor species, basically. And we spend on average 92% of our time indoors, and that's in the built environment. So architects have an enormous opportunity, and I think actually a responsibility, to be creating buildings that enable us to connect more closely with nature, because we've been very good at creating buildings that completely sever that connection. And in doing so, we've also been building in what I believe is quite an unsustainable way. So that sort of got me thinking about sustainability, because I had always identified myself as a sustainable architect. And it got me thinking about that, thinking, well, no, the way we build fundamentally, to my mind, is unsustainable. We can't keep building the same way. It requires a major paradigm shift in the way that we think about how we build our buildings. And that's really where I started to move towards this idea. And it is a borrowed idea from agriculture and other, it's further advanced in other areas, but it certainly started to become recognized in architecture. And for me, that really resonated because fundamentally, I think building can be quite a destructive act. So, the resources that we have to pull from the earth in order just to build is enormous, and we are responsible. The construction industry is responsible for close to 40% of energy-related carbon emissions worldwide, and Australia is about on par with that. We need to shift the way that we're building, I believe, to a more regenerative, so that we're not taking, and we're not just even hitting neutral, we're actually giving back through the way that we build. And that requires a regenerative lens, I believe.
So what you're talking about is more so when we're looking at developing new buildings. But recently you asked a question on social media in a post: what if buildings, cities and urban spaces functioned as ecosystems? Do you think that's something we could retrofit to existing infrastructure?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely we can. I think, if we look at how ecosystems work, we often consider buildings in isolation, and particularly as architects, we're very focused on the product of the building. But the building is part of a much broader system. When we take away a patch of land to put a building on it, we're interrupting the way water flows, we're potentially cutting down trees. There's a whole series of interruptions that happen through the act of building. So if we consider that building in isolation, sure, we might be able to produce a sustainable building, but if we're not looking at the broader impacts and how that sits within the broader ecosystem, then I don't think we're looking at the full picture, and I don't think we can call that sustainable architecture.
Well, if we don't change, what will the cost be to future generations?
Oh, that's a big question, isn't it? It's a terrifying question, really. I think the cost will be that my children and my children's children won't have the opportunity to enjoy the lives that we've enjoyed, the freedom and the carefree approach that we've been able to have to our lives, because, I live in an area where I see climate change impacting. I live on land, and it's really suffering under, the heat and the dry conditions that we've been having, and we're doing our best to regenerate that land. But we're doing that for koalas. We have koalas here, and we're losing koalas. Who knows whether our future grandchildren will even know what koalas, or ever get to see a living koala, So I actually just think we have been blessed with so much that our children may not be blessed with if we don't change the way we build.
You talk about sustainability as sort of being a neutral perspective right now. So how do we shift from that neutral impact, which we're currently sustaining, to a more positive one?
Well, I actually think that biophilic design is really one tool that we can do that with. But even I've heard people refer to biophilic design as the gateway drug for regenerative design. So biophilic design is kind of the idea that you bring nature in, and people can kind of relate to that because it's not abstract. You can actually see what happens when you start to allow nature into your environment. So the most obvious thing is introducing plants. So people are very familiar with that idea of greening buildings that way. But that starts to have impacts on indoor air quality. The way we work with natural light and ventilation and those sorts of things impact human health, and not just our physical health, our emotional health. Looking at the way we specify our materials, so using natural materials, because so many of our materials that we use in modern building are plastics. So plastics are materials that off-gas, so they release what we call these volatile organic compounds, which are, terrible for us. Once we sort of move back to nature, and nature has been designing for millennia. So, you know, it's a pretty good blueprint to work from. Nature has refined and refined its designs over time. So I don't think we need to reinvent the wheel. I think if we take that regenerative lens and we look at how nature regenerates itself and how nature goes about doing things, that is a really good lesson for us in how we might approach a more regenerative way of designing our buildings.
Given your views on sustainability and the way it's been seen as the gold standard in architecture and urbanism, what reaction have you had to your point of view recently?
Yeah, that's been, I was being a little bit tongue-in-cheek. I put a post out there saying that sustainability is dead. There, I've said it. A little bit cheeky because I do recognise that sustainable practitioners are absolutely needed, and they've been, you know, holding the torch for so long. And if we weren't, if we didn't have people doing that, then we would be in a whole lot worse position than what we are. But I also think it's an easy way to start to become comfortable and say, well, I'm doing my bit. I'm being sustainable. But we actually can't continue to sustain the way we build into the future. To me, that is unsustainable. So the dial has to shift. And calling that out, I was surprised by the response to it. There was mainly positive response. It was by and large a positive response. There was a couple of people that, you know, needed to tell me how ignorant and silly I was for taking that position. And that's okay. You know, I'm open to that debate, but I think it needs to be a constructive debate. You know, I was deliberately trying to start a conversation around this because I think it's a conversation we really need to have. So I'm glad that, you know, there was people that didn't necessarily agree with that and argued against it, because it actually helps you form your own ideas around, well, is sustainability dead? What role does it still have to play? You know, where can regenerative design take us? I think those are conversations we need to start having.
Well, it struck me as you were saying that about the way we build isn't sustainable in the long term. The way we live, more generally speaking, is not sustainable, because the way we've come to sustainability, we were already entering the tipping point. So it makes sense to start thinking, even on a personal level, what more could I actually be doing? Recently, you've taken this concept into the educational space, which made my heart glow because I'm all about children and their future. You co-authored an article called Designing Thriving School Ecosystems, and it explains how biophilic design, well-being science, and systems thinking can come together to create learning environments. This blew my mind. How did this come about, and what are you hoping to achieve through it?
Look, this came about because I am friends with a well-being scientist. Her name is Andrea Downey, and she had actually taught my son. And my son, he had been homeschooled up until grade 6, and he decided that he wanted to go to school. And I found this amazing teacher. He was really lucky that he just landed in her class. And we were talking a lot about education, and because my kids had largely, when I say I homeschooled them, essentially they just free-ranged and they just played and they followed their own interests, and, you know, some people might call it unschooling. So we didn't sort of follow a set curriculum. They went down little sort of, you know, wombat warrens of whatever their interests were and pursued that. So when I met Andrea, she was very open to the way we had approached educating our kids. And we maintained a relationship after that. And then she sort of went on and did some amazing things in well-being science. And our ideas kept colliding. So we were in completely different disciplines, but we were talking the same language, just in different areas. So this opportunity came up to write this article. And really, we were looking at the impact of biophilic design interventions on the well-being of staff and students in the classroom, and how that can, if we adopt those ideas in a really holistic way. When we talk about well-being in schools, it's often siloed, and we're talking about a piece of the curriculum that is focused on student well-being. Very rarely do we consider the environment that we're putting the kids in. This came to the fore a little bit in COVID, when we started recognising that air quality in the classroom was really important for the spread of virus. Well, it's also really important for kids' ability to concentrate. You know, so there's a whole bunch of ways that biophilic interventions can not only help well-being, but also academic performance, because it has measurable benefits for students and also then the teachers as well.
Why do you think that's so important in a learning space, particularly for young minds?
I think there's a couple of reasons. I mean, the first is because of this disconnect that we have with nature by being in these sort of closed off environments. If we want children to become stewards of nature, I think it's very hard to care about what you don't understand or don't know or don't love. And so if you're not given that opportunity to be connected with nature, then how can we expect young people to continue advocating for the environment? So I think actually introducing nature in these ways, letting kids be connected with, you know, natural materials and natural colours and natural soundscapes and natural scents, all of that is really important for their physical and emotional development, but also for them to become future stewards.
Well, we definitely need that. I keep saying to just friends, family, in general conversation, if we don't find another way for human beings to exist on this planet, we really don't have a future. And some people might think that's a little bit alarmist, but realistically, we're only a couple of generations away from absolute natural collapse and disaster on this planet.
Yeah, and it's going to require human beings to be resilient, you know, and one of the findings that some of the research that we drew on was around the Mission Australia Youth Survey, and that has about 20,000 participants each year. And one of the most significant, or in fact, the top two most significant things that students identified as being of concern to them was firstly the environment, and then secondly, it was mental health. So we know that students are worried about these things. So if we're not actually giving kids the tools to be able to take care of the environment, their mental health is also going to be suffering, because they're, you know, there's so much anxiety around the environment, that if we can introduce these biophilic principles, it's kind of a double-edged sword. It's helping with the environmental aspect of things, but it's also helping students' mental well-being.
Fiona, how do we get governments on board, seeing as they control the growth mindset we see coming through every time there's an election? It's jobs and growth and jobs. I mean, how do we get through? Because we've just discussed that's not really sustainable into the future.
Oh, look, I don't know the answer to that. It's so frustrating. I have worked in local government, and I did find that environment, it was really rewarding because it was working at a community level, and I think that's really necessary and important. But I also was incredibly challenged by the layers of bureaucracy and the value management that goes on in projects. Often the first thing to get dropped are the very things that I think we need the most in order to make a space regenerative. When that repeatedly happens, I don't know how we start to shift that dial. And the frustrating thing is that whenever you are successful in getting an intervention like that happening, where we're introducing lots of green, we're having positive impacts on flooding, we're introducing much more resilience into the environment, people and politicians are really excited and they want to get behind it after the fact, you know, but you've had to fight tooth and nail to try and get those things to even just stay in the project. And they invariably get watered down and watered down and watered down. So, you know, you might start with a grand vision and slowly these things get value managed out of the process. You know, the state government is doing some interesting things, that they've run some projects that have been with the Living Future Institute of Australia, and they're very much focused on regenerative design principles. So I think there's a growing awareness of it, but we just need more people. And that's partly why I wanted to have this conversation on LinkedIn that got people sort of a bit fired up about sustainability being dead. I think the more people that are starting to actually question this and talk about regenerative design, the more it becomes a more of a mainstream discussion. And then politicians, you know, that their mandate is given to them by the people. So if more people are demanding this, then of course they're going to start to take on board these things.
our children and youth stand to inherit all of this. So given that what we've just discussed is government may not be as quick to act, does it come back to the individual? And if so, how do we have those conversations with our children? Obviously, it's something you may have experienced personally about what the future looks like.
Yeah, look, I was at the British School of Jakarta in June last year, and was having these conversations with students. And you can imagine in Jakarta, it's an incredibly highly urbanised concrete jungle. There's 39.5 million people that live in Jakarta. So it's a massive, and air pollution is a major problem. And kids spend a lot of time indoors because of that, but also because of the heat and lightning strikes. You know, it's a very tropical kind of unstable environment. And those kids, they're acutely aware of what's happening, but they're also, I think we don't credit kids enough for understanding. We don't credit their level of understanding and their ability to come up with creative solutions that us oldies just can't. You know, they are able to think outside the box in ways that we might not, because we've been trained a certain way. I was doing some biophilic design workshops with them, and some of their solutions were incredible. They, you know, and they were getting on their 3D printers, and they were, you know, pulling out clay, and they were creating all sorts of 3D fly-throughs, and they just had amazing ideas. So I actually think giving them agency and respecting their ability, not that the responsibility is theirs to fix what we've messed up, but giving them the agency to say, hey, you guys have messed up, and we've got some ideas about how we might move forward, and listening to that, I think, is really important.
Respect to you. I admire your knowledge so much, and I appreciate you being here with me to share that knowledge with our listening audience. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kim. It's been a real pleasure.
Regenerative architect and biophilic design consultant, Dr. Fiona Gray, talking about how the design of our cities can sever our connection with the natural world, accelerating climate change, driving a mental health crisis, and creating a flawed economic model. If you'd like to know more about her work and how urban spaces could function as ecosystems, you'll find all the links in the episode description. Or you can search for Dr. Fiona Gray, G-R-A-Y. Join me for more conversations about things that matter every Friday. Great stories with real human beings with real life experience. You can connect with me on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or find more connection points on my website, kimclyden.com. This podcast is recorded in Launchpad Studios thanks to Greater Whitsunday Innovation, formerly Split Spaces.